And good evening, good evening, good evening. Guys, just straight off, for this tonight's session, we technically only have an hour session, meaning at 7:30. Unfortunately, this will be the end of the program for this Friday session, to be followed by, after that, by the Matriarch and her program directly after that. Now, in today's session, guys, it's going to be sweet, it's going to be short, it's going to be pretty condensed, and I'm going to get straight to the point of everything. So for tonight's business and economic zone, I'm going to actually stretch this discussion point over two sessions, meaning tonight, and we will continue it into Monday evening. Because this is of vital importance. This is how we as an economy, this is as how we as a country develop into the next phase, how we'll be able to make use of the next phase of opportunities, technological advances, as well as also economic growth, and the list in terms of opportune moments can go from there. I don't know how many phrases to use or include, but it's going to be based upon this discussion. Now, we start off from a point. What is this point? Well, in this week's State of the Nation address, yes, I'm getting back to that, President Hage Geingob indicated that he is awaiting the finalized report from the task force that he appointed, the Fourth Industrial Revolution Task Force. Actually, this task force was assigned with a task in terms of assessing Namibia's readiness in terms of taking this further, or grasping this opportunity, or being able to be a player within this international economy or economic platform, or how to take Namibia into that level. Whichever one of those, explanatory directions you want to use, it's still about in terms of how we can get there, or how we will be able to be there, or how we will function while there. Now, here's one of the most important things, guys. That report is still not out. The president is still waiting for it. Straightforward. Yes. But second and first and foremost, as well as also second and third of it, is what does it mean? What does it mean when you say Fourth Industrial Revolution? What does it mean to the caller I had on Tuesday night? Or was it Wednesday night? The guy that told me that in terms of grasping the opportunity, making use of the opportunity of even trying to develop the rural communities, that there are rural communities in this country that you don't even have, in Afrikaans, we call it a tweespoor. A tweespoor is like, that track, that road track, like on a farm or way out somewhere in some conservancy. It's just those two tracks, the two tire tracks that run. We call it a tweespoor. Sometimes it's even known as the other one, because sometimes it's just a single one known as a bierspoor, something that the cattle left, because the cattle will guide themselves like that. If there are communities like that in the country, how can you even think of bridging, getting into an industrial complex if we have people that do not even have, they've never seen a light switch, they don't have electricity where they are in some of those rural communities? How do you think of trying to grasp an opportunity if you have not even uplifted in the other end of the spectrum? How? How do we think that way, guys? I know yesterday we were at the Moody's ranking discussion. The day before that, we highlighted the State of the Nation address tidbits that came out of it. There's currently, I think it's right now, it started like 40 minutes ago, the PDM's take on the State of the Nation address. Or was that yesterday? I think that was yesterday. Yeah, I think that was yesterday, 7th. Sorry, that was yesterday. Those kinds of discussion points, they're done now. They're done now. But there are other discussion points that the president touched on that needs further digestion on. Now, with Namibia's readiness, and in terms of this, my question to you out there, the listeners, from 7 o'clock. is going to be straightforward. And I'm unfortunate, guys, we'll have to condense the caller's participation. Meaning, rules of engagement is 5 minutes max or 3 minutes. You know, try to condense it as much as possible. I won't crisscross you. If you want to put a point forward, put the point forward, and then we leave it there. Second on that is also, in terms of that, if you don't have the studio number, in terms of calling in, it's 083-288-401. 083-288-401. But don't call in now. I still have to get through like my intro in terms of discussion points that I'm going to put on the table for everyone to have a look at. Now, the fourth industrial revolution, guys, back in 2016, actually 2015, this term was coined by Mr. Klaus, what's this guy's name again? Klaus Schwab. I hope I'm getting this, my German pronunciation right. Klaus Schwab, yes, there he is. Klaus Schwab is the gentleman, he's the founder and the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum is one of these, you know, forums in terms of where investors and countries come together. It's similar to the G20. It's similar to the G7. It's similar to that Davos summit that takes place at the the Davos summit was supposed to take place now somewhere. It's those kinds of private clubs for the guys that make decisions about the world. Now, Schwab also coined it in the book that he wrote just after that. The book that was also self-entitled The Fourth Industrial Revolution. Now, this all, guys, sounds all good and wonderful, but the book or the whole discussion point regarding the Fourth Industrial Revolution centers upon artificial intelligence, gene editing, and as well as also advanced robotics, and then later on, decentralized production methods. The decentralized production methods actually speak to the artificial intelligence aspect. It speaks to that. But I'm going to pose three questions in my discussions with you guys. First and foremost, the fourth industrial revolution will play a major role in most industries that you and I see operating in our economy. That being manufacturing, that being processing, that being, for example, even mining, that being also transport and logistics, that being as well as also, what's the other one? Medicine. I'm highlighting these industries for you to see the context within which those handful of things will be able to play in. Medicine. As well as also the research and development phases or research and development aspects of the overall economic, of a country's overall economic performance. Now, the research and development aspect has to do with what you would see happening in Japan, what you would see happening in Rwanda, what you would see happening here in South Africa, what you would see happening in Brazil, what you would see happening in China, South Korea, Germany, Finland, where else? Italy, Spain, Portugal, you name it. And I'm starting from the research and development because the research and development ties in strongly with our level, our competitiveness, our sort of like our skill and knowledge base in our tertiary education or in our tertiary institutions. Why? Let me give you one of the most impressive examples I've ever seen in my life. Besides the cell phone that Rwanda is going to build, besides Rwanda deciding to make the entire country a Wi-Fi hotspot. Guys, the country is a Wi-Fi hotspot. But in all honesty, the country is smaller than the Comas region. It can fit in the Comas region. Or it actually is as big as the Comas region. Those are impressive things. It won't be long probably until they've also solved, they've actually probably already solved their housing problem in Rwanda, a country of 5 million people. Small space, yes, unfortunately, small space. Suffered an atrocious event back in 1994, indeed. But they've solved all that. They solved all that with the scarce resources they have. And I say scarce because the country is small. The country is very cramped for living space. Scarce resources. Landlocked country. With pretty illustrious and pretty powerful neighbors around it. If you have to look at the geopolitical situation even. And this is what most economists look at. They look at the geopolitics. Then they look at the demographics. Then they look at, you know, in terms of what resources come does the country offer. And secondly, you know, they then start looking at like market factors. What are the value addition levels, the levels of value addition that this country can possess, that this country can offer? So far, Rwanda has done its best and it is still improving on its best. First and foremost, it's impressive. Let's start off with that. Let's start off with that. But this is a country that had to rebuild faster than Namibia has been able to change its way of getting inequality or getting poverty out the door or getting other things out of the door. I don't know what the other things is, but I can't just slap the name tag poverty on it. I can't just slap the name tag of rural communities still not seeing electricity 32 years after independence. It's not so easy. It's not so easy. That caller from 2-3 nights back, I'm speaking under correction in terms of when he called, but that caller had one of the most important premises that he suggested there. If there is a potential to develop rural agricultural markets, meaning people who just need an access road, some services extended to them, so on and so forth. You know, you start looking at the things that perhaps a local authority was supposed to do. I say a local authority because they will fall within a region. And each region, I know it, I just don't know what the term is, but I know what it is, and you know what it is. Each region has their own developmental role to play. Plus, I also speak under correction in terms of, you know, the overall picture, but each region, as far as I know, has their own individual developmental role to play, individually and collectively. Because collectively, it builds up into, you know, how good a ministry's portfolio looks like, because the local authorities and the regional authorities would all form part of, I think it's, what's the minister's name? Erastus Otoni's ministry. Ministry of Urban and Rural Development. If that's his portfolio. So if those guys on the ground know what to do, I'm taking out the politics element because for tonight we're not going to stress the politics, but we are going to stress our deficiencies. So take out the politics and you just look at the deficiencies as they are. Now the deficiencies, first and foremost, has come through. Sure, we still have rural communities that have not seen a light switch. Some do not even have an access road, meaning a road to access, even if it's a tweespoor. A tweespoor is just those two tracks, guys. You don't even need a grader to create that. Now, in terms of the developmental aspect, in terms of just developing that thing, you know, it would build in some direction. I say it would build in some direction if such communities were at least connected to the closest urban centers around them. Sure, if, you know, there are some that are pretty deep in rural settings. Pretty deep. It's a given, guys. It's a given. I'm also not propagating nor indicating that, you know, harsh examples like what you sometimes have heard in things happen in Australia or even like in North America, where they've got like reservations just like we have here in Namibia, where those local authorities there, in terms of bringing services closer to rural communities, they've had to uproot a rural community and bring them closer to an urban community or an urban, the closest urban center. That is not the way to go. Otherwise, we'll have another time bomb in terms of access to land and, any other land-based or land ownership-based discussion. Now, access to services, guys, is one of the most important things. If you want to see how you're going to improve people's lives, access to services. Access to services would also allow you to better add additional value add. Now, these are all investments, and unfortunately, it comes from the state itself. Building a tweespoor, trying to get some sort of electric. You don't need to build a clinic there at those very far off, those very far off, far flung or isolated rural communities or homesteads that are so hidden. But the best thing that you can do is connecting them to the greater Namibian public. I say this because, guys, we, once again, Namibia is, I'm going to mention this again, Namibia and South Africa are the two other countries in Southern Africa, as well as also in the world, with the highest inequality. Highest inequality. I say it again, you cannot think of the fourth industrial revolution. You cannot think of the fourth industrial revolution if you have such a statistic hanging over you. And the caller of last night, I know I forgot about you. In terms of the Moody's rating, it's going to feature in there as well. Because anything you do, the world is watching you. They are watching us. They have been watching us. They have been watching us. The world is not oblivious to us. But anything we do, it's about two things first. Let's get ourselves out of that inequality bracket. Let's get ourselves out of that bracket or out of that notion where we have isolated, far-flung, unreachable rural communities who have not seen electricity, who don't have installed water services up to them, like a tap that runs to them. Sure, there's a borehole, but a borehole is not as safe or doesn't provide you with, the initial safety that at least treated water from a tap can provide. It's a borehole. It's a well. It's neto wa. It's just there. It's just there. It affects your teeth. It affects your intestines. Now, this fourth industrial revolution discussion point, guys, it might sound to you that I've digressed greatly, but I haven't. Because I've indicated you the deficiency, the major deficiency. For us to think about the fourth industrial revolution, you should not think about it. You shouldn't. The question then is not about how do we get part of it. The question is a matter of when can we become part of it. When? You cannot invite investors to a country if you have a statistic as bad as the most unequal society, one of the most unequal societies in the world. You can't have that on your head and you want to invite investors to you. You can't, guys. You can't act that way. We can't act that way. Do you know what that is? And it's a term that I've never liked because I've also been called that term just because, because of my own living, my own way of living. It's the terminology of having a bourgeois attitude. Yes, we've got a bourgeois attitude. We want to go, to investor seminars and investor summits and go and invite the investors at that Dubai conference, that the World Expo. But we've got people here who've not seen a light switch ever. Ever. A light switch. Now, how detached from reality should you be if that kind of scenario is posed to you? How detached from reality are you to even fathom the discussion of a fourth industrial revolution? Do you know what's the worst part? Do you know what's the worst part, guys? Do you know what's the worst part? As a country, you should have at least have gone, you should at least have featured, and this is from basic developmental studies in high school that I remembered from 1999. If you ask me where I was at 1999, I was in grade 9. But this is from basic developmental studies, high school stuff. A country should at least, ne, in terms of looking at a country's economy, a country should at least answer one of the first three fundamental requirements, also known in law as essentialia. Requirements, a basic requirement. You should have, you can have a extracting industry. That's your mining. That can also be your agricultural sector. Then you need to have, you need to have, you need as an essential a secondary industry, which has to do with processing and value addition. Then you get your last industry, your tier 3 industry. And your tier 3 industry spawns into your services industry. Namibia only has number 1 and number 2. Number 1 and number 4. But number 4 is an extra. It's an extra. We don't have number 2 as big as what we should have. We don't have number 3 as big as what we should have. If we don't have those two even, to be able to say, guys, do you know that we, as we are standing here, Namibians, we can build our own car. I'm not talking about that thing in Valfaspy where we are putting cars together. It's an assembly plant. No. You can build your own car. You can build your own car. You can. Why is China the only China the only example? China and India. Why are they the only two examples that exist of countries that changed their fortunes within 30, 40, 50 years? Why? Obviously, in China's case, they decided to have one centralized political philosophy that then translated into their economic philosophy. Meaning that if the political leadership makes a decision, it should cascade throughout the entire country. Because that is the understanding that the Chinese discussion or the Chinese theory regarding communism. Their communism. Their communism was greatly different from the Russian communism. Now, the question still begs, guys. We've had 30 years now. We've had 30 years. But obviously, we are pegged first and foremost in terms of economic factors. We're pegged to the South African rand. Every governor that has come in at the central bank has indicated this is as a buffering method for us. I still appreciate the safety, the safety that this peg provides to us. Because if you've heard the scary stuff in history, in human history, of someone's currency, your currency or your economy being held hostage through your currency. There's some scary stuff out there, guys. There's some scary stories, some scary precedents. One of the biggest ones was Indonesia and Singapore, where a guy in France, or was it in Wales? No, in France or in London, he bought up an entire country's currency. This was 1996 or 1995. He held an entire country's currency hostage. Actually, no. He held the economy hostage because he was buying up all the currency. Now, I'm appreciative of such protection methods that our central bank has. But once again, I'm gonna state this part. I am digressing on purpose from the fourth industrial revolution, because on purpose, Namibia is number two behind South Africa in terms of most unequal societies. Let that sink in. Namibia is behind South Africa in terms of most unequal societies. Obviously, you can make your own deduction as to what that leads to. Most unequal societies links into the question of land. But I'm not a land activist, guys. We have to work in reality. We have to work in reality. I'm not a full-on land activist by soul. First and foremost, I don't know what it is to be an activist about, because the examples that exist are mostly that they make a lot of noise. Some of the few logically thinking activists, the cool-headed ones, like the gentleman that I've interviewed here on the early morning scoop, Benedict Lowe, who's from the affirmative repositioning. He's got one of the best points of view in terms of that inequality discussion. He will lay it out for you. And guys, the land discussion even is not a question of coming in from, I don't know, you can take so many, you can choose any entry point. The moment you enter, you will automatically branch out into all the other entry points that you try to ignore into that land discussion. It's deep rooted in Namibia's history. The same for South Africa. They're both deep rooted. They're both deep rooted, guys. Kanjengo himself, he had been weighing up the, you know, if you guys remember the various red line discussions that he himself had weighed up here. The red line itself, guys, in all honesty, for anyone, if you've ever had a look at how the red line flows in Namibia, it flows over three forts that the Germans built, the colonial Germans had built. Three forts. It follows the three forts. The one at number 20. There's one in close to Opuo. But if you open up any detailed Namibian map on Google that shows the names, it'll show you geographic locations. If you see those geographic locations, just look for the red line one. If you look for number 20, look in Kunene. There's one, and I think the other fort was here close to Grootfontein. So the red line itself, nah. Even though the affirmative repositioning leader himself, Job Amopanda, uses the other name of 1890s, the 1896 line, or you know, that other dated line name he uses for the line, the red line itself was to draw a line. So Namibia and South Africa, guys, Namibia and South Africa. And the unfortunate thing is, our society is almost a copycat society of South Africa. The cars you find here are sold in South Africa. It's just our petrol and our diesel are slightly different, but the diesel, I think, is the same. It's just the petrol. They are one octane higher than us. That's all. They supply us with electricity. That's all. We buy a lot of goods and services you see in our shops. That's all. We watch their TV products. That's all. Obviously, the only thing they can't beat us is, you know, is you guys listening to me here on Eagle FM or listening to us here on Eagle FM's programming throughout the day. We're a little bit more interactive in that sense. But I've been ignoring the callers. Let me get the first caller in for tonight's discussion. I have to stress, guys, we have to condense. So let's keep it short and sweet. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, good evening, Dwight. How are you?
I'm all right, and you, Uncle Bona?
Good. Mm. The question that you asked, the Namibia and South Africa are the most unequal society.
Mm.
On your finding, what causes, what are the root causes of that?
Uncle Bona, those guys, it was linked to our land distribution discussion.
Yeah, yes. So what goes, you see, and that is actually a very good starting point for us to address the inequality that has been created, because we know from the time the colonializer came, they depossessed you the land, then it came apartheid again system that segregated the people and also dispossessed the people with their everything. So that, and if you see those the colonialism and the apartheid system, and for you, and I don't know how long the apartheid start implementing the apartheid the system that when they took over from the League of Nations. So now you can now see the damage. And you just mentioned now that, 1999 or whatever you were in grade what? Grade 9. So I think for us to really, you can understand the situation from the books and other things. The practicality of that, the apartheid system, the impact apartheid system have on us, even now, it will be very, very, very difficult for you to systematically address that thing as of now. But it's going to be addressed. It's being addressed. But for you now to expect that thing, if you still have the people who possess, who actually possess most of the land and everything you were storing, actually. People were talking about ancestral land and all these other things. But now you expect those things to be addressed in the 30 years time? Unless if we take a revolution and say yes.
By force,
let's repossess them.
Yeah,
let's jump in. You know that one is not going to be...
It's not going to be easy.
It won't be even allowed.
Yeah, it won't
Nobody will even allow you to do that. So that's why I even heard that Kanana one day was here saying his mission. Was saying yes, even when he came, even at his village there. And he was even the headman. But when he came, his house was taken over.
Yeah.
And you know what he did? He just excused himself. So now, should we now go on lavage and take over those things? Which is not going to be good.
It's not.
So we just need to deal with these things systematically and create some kind of awareness and education and see whether God will touch their heart to at least give up some of those productive resources that they are holding on. Also to understand humanity. Because I can tell you, like even people will come in the near future and say, yes, yeah, we are, and we are going to take the land by force. What are you going to do? So it's better to avoid some of those kind of things for now, at least, because people who understand the struggle and the apartheid and everything, and then they understand the reconciliation and how it will stabilize the world in Namibia, the global peace we are talking about. And if people are not willing, those who have got the product, land, and everything, the resources, in future they will regret, and which is not good. And the leaders who are there now are trying to say, yes, please, let's stick to the reconciliation. Let's stick to these things so that we can coexist and things like that. But the people who might come in future, will they understand that thing?
No, they won't, Angabwana. But can I ask you something, Angabwana? If you have to look at, let's say, for example, we're just sticking on this one thing in terms of how fair it is for one person to own such land, so much land. I don't want us to get into a political discussion.
Not fair. It's actually not fair. You know already it's not fair.
Yeah.
Even if I have got a statistic here, the amount of money the government spend in the acquiring the land to resettle people. But even if they are still having the money, but the people are not willing to sell their land.
But it's an excessive, an expensive exercise for the government, Angabwana. That's one of the other things.
It is inexpensive, but the government has gone so far scratching their head to make sure that they make the money available. Even if you ask them, those people who are dealing with the thing, they will still tell you that, yes, we still have the land and the money here to purchase, to acquire the farms and the land and things like that. But the private owners, the people who have got the thing, they are not willing to sell the land. What do you do?
That's the thing. There's nothing you can do.
So that's why we are saying, let's see how we can assist and compromise some of the things and give the things. Because some of those people, some of them are land absent, landlord. Some of them have got 5, 6, 7, and they inherited these things, and they are saying this. And you even hear some people saying, we have not stolen the land, we haven't done anything. Those kind of comments. Are people going to just be patient and all these things until when? So we need to act and see how we can really collaborate and make sure that let's make the land available for the people. And they know already that people are crying there outside because of the land. And they are just laughing and they are just blooming in their hotels there and all these things. But when the situation turns sour, who's going to be blamed for it? So let's see how we can address that inequality. And it's not that inequality is not caused by us.
No, it wasn't caused by us. It wasn't caused by us.
By the apartheid system, the colonizer. Let me end up there, my brother, for the other people to come.
No, Angabwana, before you go, I want you to condense on this one question. Do you think we are ready for the fourth industrial revolution?
So we are actually, we are moving in the right direction. That's what people are, you know, and they, even when they do those things that are there, you were mentioning them there. And there are people who are now giving me scholarship and all these other things to get ready for that. So when are we going to be ready? We must prepare ourselves. We should get ready.
But Angabwana, do you think we are ready now? It's just yes or no.
Yeah, we are ready.
Okay.
We are putting things in place to be ready. And we are ready, actually. Maybe we are not at the highest level, but I'm sure we are ready.
Okay. No, it's not 100% Angabwana. Thanks for coming through, Angabwana.
Bye.
Now, getting into the last 7 minutes, guys. I'm going to stress it again. The fourth industrial revolution, my perspective is we are not ready. We are far from ready. But I want to hear what the next caller says because I see the line is flashing. So let's get the next caller in. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, Dwight.
Yes, how are you doing?
The evening is good.
I hope it's good for you.
It's fine. I'm just sleeping.
No problem. Yeah, what do you want to share?
No, we are not ready for the fourth industrial. Our education system.
Good one. You actually choose the one that I'm trying to avoid because I might be stepping on toes there.
Yeah.
I might have. Yeah.
It's like what you're saying and the way we sign treaties. Like what you're saying, we are having Egypt manufacture
plant.
That's assembling car in Valvesby.
Yeah.
It's killed because of the policies that the calendar administration, so the people in Salami, those who were trusted with the duty to represent the government, they didn't do the thorough research, because all what they were thinking was the car will be assembled here, and on a Skoda world, it will appear that the car is made in Namibia. But there are certain conditions that each country must go through before the product is declared that this product is made by Dwight or this product is made by Ephraim. Because there are a certain requirement that the system will demand from you, and you must comply with it. But if you don't comply, then the system will always reject. That's why at the end of the day, all I think what our government wanted was, they wanted to make profit. But now, remember, those parts that are being bought from plants, they are very, very expensive.
And they're bought in USD, ne?
Yes. They are very, very expensive. And remember, even the profit that is being made out of the car is going back to France, because the system says the country of origin where the product is made is France.
Yeah.
So it's obvious the profit is going to France.
Mm.
Yeah, before I start that, I want to go to... What is this we were speaking now? We asked the question of coffee industry. On the land issue.
Yeah.
Is it Dwight? I'm not... I like to be fair, and I like to be very honest and robust. Zimbabwe went through the way of land expropriation without compensation. What happened?
They were attacked. Let's say that.
Yes.
Because let me be specific.
Let us have a frank conversation.
Mm.
The farms were given to black people.
Yeah.
In Zimbabwe. What happened?
Unproductivity.
They went to accuse that white people did not taught them how to farm.
Yeah.
When was Zimbabwe got independence?
Wasn't it 1980? 84? I think.
Yeah, 84, 86.
Yeah.
You understand?
The real independence, not the one where England took out, the real one.
Yeah, the real one. Like ours, 1990, like for South Africa, 1994. So, to me, I think someone has stated it. All successful nations, you check to France, Germany, China, Russia, those countries, they stick to their indigenous language. Their people are being taught in local language. As we taught in foreign language. Instead of us to learn, we are doing what? We are memorizing. We can't learn. And this is the issue we were discussing with you. Why, when we were having COVID-19, we are begging, if we are not sending people on study loans, expensive to Russia, Ukraine,
China, India,
United States. Why China? Why are we not competing with other nations? Why we remain a nation of beggar after 32 years of independence? These are the fundamental questions we must ask ourselves. Are our people taught to think, or they are being taught to remember? These are the questions. What's wrong with our education? How can we be ready for the fourth industrial if our country does not even produce even a toothpick, even an underwear?
Even a t-shirt or a sock?
Underwear, let's speak about the toothpick.
Well, the underwear and the toothpick are the two smallest,
There is one question that was being asked during the Namibian political flag independence of 21 March. When France was having Michael Anselelo and Ephraim Nekongo, the Swapo Party, Jombi's victory. What was the question asked? Why did Japan give us race instead of coming and putting up an industry here for us to make car? Why are they giving us food? If they know that Namibia, 99% of cars that are land in Namibia loads are from Japan. Why are they giving us food?
That's a good question.
Coming and set up the industry.
Yeah. Why are they giving us just food?
Exactly. So can they only hear that there was drought in Namibia for the past 4 years, but they don't hear when we are speaking in Igre FM like now that we need industries so that we produce our own. We are tired of being subject of those who own. These are the fundamental questions we must ask ourselves. Why, when the other countries, you know, we had rice and the cooking oil are from Ukraine, those places and fuel are going up, okay? Why are we not increasing our raw materials such as uranium?
Yeah.
Because uranium are the ones that being used to drain submarine in Russia. Uranium are used to make weapon of mass destruction. Why are we not increasing the place of those commodities? Why?
Why don't we have a say in the price, even?
Exactly. And I can tell you a shocking story. And I hope no one will follow me. Did you know who determined the place of uranium when it's exported to China? Yeah, it's Chinese.
Yeah.
I've seen invoices from Soko uranium. The Chinese determine how much
the value is.
The place of the container be for them to pay duty and taxes. How? Why? Because all people who are having management position in Swako, and these are the question I ask you. Is it really impossible for us here, Dwight, to have key position in mind but be given to an Indian? We must sit in those managements. We must see how much is a container of uranium is expensive to change. Why should the Chinese determine the price of our commodity?
And do you know what's the shocking thing?
Yes.
Last year, I did a little exercise in terms of looking at Namibia's uranium, looking at uranium exports around the world. Do you know where we sit in the world? In the world for 2020 and 2021, we exported. We are in the top five.
Just imagine.
We are in the top five, and we are not seeing the top five worth of investment or money coming back or revenue from uranium.
The question that Swagbe was making very frank in the parliament yesterday. That's why I'm saying if we do away with partisan politics, you understand? People like Swagbe, you know what he's saying? He's saying it does not help you bridge roads. It does not help you come and you bring investors here to own mines. But our institution of wealth is distribution does not touch individuals.
No, it doesn't. You understand? It doesn't.
Yeah, it does not help anything. How do you look, even if Gengob goes to Dubai, he goes to the UK or Germany, saying he is boasting and saying we have resources. The first question he's been asked, but your people are poor, you have people that are living in shacks. And these are the questions, some of the things that Professor Joseph Diso was saying. Did you know that in Windhoek, there are more cell phones than in Germany? But Germany produce cell phones and cars. In Windhoek, there is more Mercedes-Benz than in Germany.
Yeah.
But cars are produced in Germany.
Yeah.
So how do you explain that?
We just can't. It's an anomaly. It's an anomaly. That's the worst thing. It's an anomaly.
And these are some of the issues that I came to raise, like what I said. We are here in Namibia trying to give Zimbabwe a key position. SME Bank, they were sitting up. Transnamib now and South Africa Airing is demanding their money to be paid, 161 million to be paid in 15 days because of that Zimbabwe that appointing people and giving them work visas there. But their country cannot even produce a bread. But they are claiming to be educated in other... If you check VBS Bank in South Africa, it was rooted by the same people from that country. But they come to... Other people in the country claim to be educated. But they can't even... They were even... Okay, Mugabe tried when he was able to lose... When people lose hope from him, he expropriated the land. He gave them the land. They come back and accuse white people. They have not taught us how to farm. But they are trying here when they come to Namibia, they come here and saying they will take us to the promised land. And this is what I continue to say. If we do not have responsibility toward our own people, I'm always saying, and it's not about me being an African. It's not me being against it, a certain people. Sometimes we must be honest. Even if you give, if Dwight is from Hobabis, you give Dwight job somewhere. And these are the things like what we're saying, we have a structural violence. You understand? Whereby, I have done this research. If you check people who are having key positions in our Angwena region, being in Helauna City or Shikango, Dwight, they are from Utapi. Look how Utapi was. Enana was declared a town before Utapi. Now, if you check the people who are having management key positions up to Okongo, they are from that side.
Yeah.
But what's paining it, Dwight, is Oskango. It's a gazetted point of entry. Export and import is happening. The warehousing. Oskango today does not even have ablution facilities. Water, running water or toilet. But there is an individual who is living in the village of Oskango, but his house is having ablution facilities. How do you explain that?
And Oshikango looks like a town, eh? All the photos that I've seen. It's the only place I haven't
seen.
You'll
be shocked, Dwight. Travel to Oskango even next weekend. You go to the toilet. You ask. So Oskango, the people are even asking very straight. The smell you feel.
Yeah.
I was shocked to see that in Oskango, when you are making use of the toilet, you hear some duck. What is going on? There's no processing. There's no operation facility. The people are saying there is nothing.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
We can't. But then I also have to ask. We've somewhat ended now for our discussion. Is there still something that you want to add, lastly?
No, just ask.
All right. But thanks again for coming through. We will continue this on Monday because our fourth industrial revolution discussion is not done yet.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not done yet.
And I'm still waiting for you on your research, so that maybe you can see I'm giving you wrong figure of when we are killing our own transport industry. Have you verified the road authority?
Not yet. I haven't gotten that far yet. I've had to look my own little basic research.
We can't get anywhere. We need to be organized as a country. And that's what I'm saying. We need to trust our own people. The responsibility is that you grow the capacity at home. Our government has nice initiative of grow at home strategy, but those laws are not being enforced. Those are the things we need to do.
So exactly.
If you don't trust your own people, it's unfortunate. You won't grow your own country because the other people who come, they take the money, they go invest in their own country.
Yeah.
That is it.
Exactly.
But do it.
No problem. Thanks for coming through, man.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too, man. And on that note, guys, it brings us to the end of this evening's program. The matriarch is here. She's waiting for me to vacate. For that and that matter, I won't spend any much more time. See you again over the weekend, as well as also back on Monday for the start of the new week on the Business and Economic Zone. Stay tuned here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.